here. We thought we were all ready. It's not even on. Okay, we're in this section, which we call the practical section of the teaching of the book of Romans, where Paul spent chapter 1 through 11 talking about what God did for us and by his grace. And when we appreciate what he did for us, doing for us what we couldn't do for ourselves, freely given, it should move us to respond in a certain way, out of gratitude. And that's summarized in chapter 12, verse 1 and 2, where Paul says, I beg you or I urge you, depending on your version, that you present your bodies as a living sacrifice to God, which is your reasonable service of worship. So a couple things we learn here, that we present our entire life to God as a sacrifice. And he doesn't want our dead bodies, but he wants everything we do, a living life. And so when you go to work, your marriage, your play, everything you're doing, you're saying, God, here's what I think of you out of gratitude and what you've done for me. Here's the best I can give you and back. And we view that all as worship. Worship, in other words, we're honoring God with how we live in our life. So the way we do that in verse 2 is don't be conformed to this world, but he says be transformed by the renewing of your life. And so here we see that everything we do, and I'll get to it right here, is going to be the idea of disregard that lamp will shut down because it won't. That's our bodies, right? Replace your body. It will shut down soon. Don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And so, in other words, the world has its approach to the way you should live life, and we've been affected by that. And God says, I want you to put my will in your mind and start thinking like I think. And so you'll now, with new attitudes, will have new behaviors. And those new behaviors will glorify me because you're living as the way I designed you to live. And so that's why we're saying that when I put God's will in my mind, it affects my attitude towards government, marriage, every aspect of my life. All right? Now, we're going to look at our social life in the last two verses of chapter 12, because he's just getting a series of practical applications. Then in chapter 13, he's going to talk about how this affects our attitude towards government. So that's where we're going here in our lesson. So first of all, look with me in chapter 12. And he started in verse 3, saying we're not to think more highly of ourselves than we ought to think. And he returns to that thought down in verse 16. Be of the same mind towards one another. Don't be haughty in mind, but associate with the lowly. Don't be wise in your own estimation. We left off with this verse last week. In other words, we're going to have an attitude towards one another that God had towards us. Because was God too good to help us? That's the only way I can ask that. Well, you would think in his majesty being creator, and we're just, you know, his creation, and we were his enemies, and we were sinful, and we'd fallen short. But no, we see that Jesus humbled himself. He wasn't too good to come down and become one of us to help us. So if that's what God did for us, what should be my attitude towards one another? I'm never too good to help you and come down to your level. You say, well, just that's that haughty attitude, come down to your level. Well, aren't there different levels in society? Physically, social class, financially, and all that. And you never get so rigid in who you are and your class you think you're better than someone else that you can't serve someone else. Yes? Okay.
And I always tend to think of President Carter.
Yes.
Who, while was president of the United States, also worked with Habitat for Humanity.
Yes, he did, didn't he?
And, you know, had his hammer right out there with the folks trying to build accommodations for themselves. That's what I think of.
Habitat for Humanity, where they're building homes for people that can't have homes or for them. It's a great organization, all right? I think of Jesus too himself. What did he do when they went in the upper room? Yeah, he washed the disciples' feet. No, that's too low. That's beneath me. That's a servant's job, a slave's job. But he said, no, what did I do for you? Served you. You do likewise to others. So, yes, same type of thing. Okay? Now, but then he turns to this attitude. Well, we'll read it. Verse 17. Never, that's how it starts, pay back evil for evil to anyone. Respect what is right in the sight of all men. If possible, as far as depends on you, be at peace with all men. Never take your own revenge, beloved, but leave room for the wrath of God, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. So now when it's coming to social relations, when you have the will of God in your life transformed, you're not going to live like the world does. So let's just ask the question. The answer is already yes. Will you have problems with certain people in this world? Yes. And here's a problem right over here sitting. Will some people treat you unfairly and wrongly?
Sure.
Yes. So how should we respond when we're mistreated by others? Well, here's what he says, hot coals. Never pay back evil for evil. One of the reasons is now you have succumbed to their level, right? You become just as bad as they have. Now, we know how the little fights go, and they start in school, and they continue through adulthood. Someone pushes you, and what do? You push them back. But invariably, or inevitably, how do you push them back? With the same equal amount of force, exactly 100? No, it's always what? A little harder, right? Because it's... Revenge is a good thing. When we understand revenge, that's the word, it comes from the word we get justice from. The Old Testament teaches justice, right? Eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. That if you steal $10, I should get my $10 back. I shouldn't get $1,000. I should get what? 10. But when I push back, what do? Pay more than you deserve. And then they come back with then a swing, right? And now it's escalated into a fight. So he says, no, don't even go there. And Jesus says, before you seek revenge, what should you do? Someone slaps you on the face? You turn the cheek before you stoop to their level. Now, does that mean you have to take the other blow? No, walk away after you get slapped. But if you have to still face a person, and it's a choice of whether I'm going to strike back or take another blow. What do before you strike back? Take the other blow. Man, that's tough. Did Jesus live that way? Yeah, he never spoke back. He never struck back. Was he able to? Yes. Was it in his right? Yes. But see, living a transformed life is no longer about my rights. See, I'm giving those up because I'm living for something more noble and more and larger. And that's tough because all that's instilled in us, I have rights. That's not fair. Well, it's not fair, but we're living above that, okay? So he says, respect what is right in sight of all men. If it depends upon you, be at peace with all men. What does that verse tell us? If it's possible, be it, and as so far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men. What does that tell you that it's you can't do? You can't be at peace with everyone. Isn't that what it says? So, if it's possible, as much as it depends on you, it's opening the door. There's sometimes you're not going to get along with certain people, but it better not be on you. There better not be any blame laid on you. You do all that you can to make it work. Say you're sorry, be forgiving, whatever it is. And if it's on them, that's okay. You've done your job. Yes?
It's like not being an aggressor.
Yeah, you don't be the aggressor. You don't be the paybacker. Yes?
Well, I get this love of kids on the bus. It's like, well, I'll do it. I'll cool down and settle down if they do it first.
That's right.
You can only control you. You can influence other people.
Yeah.
I'm
working on a lesson about that very thing, what you're saying. And the whole idea of the lesson is when you change, things will change around you. Because in a marriage, isn't that what happens, what you just said? Well, when she changes, then I'll change. It's always about the other person. And we carry that attitude into a lot of life. And a lot of it's true, but again, we'll rise above it. Sometimes it's not fair how people treat you. So do whatever it takes to be at peace with all men. That's got to be your mantra, just your guiding principle. I will try to be at peace. Then he goes back to this idea of never take revenge, but you got to leave room. You got to love this. Give God the opportunity to do his job, because who does vengeance belong to? He says that. And of course, we can make the argument he'll do a better job of it, of course. And he always does it correctly. It's not escalated. It's equitable and fair. So just as it is written, Leviticus 19, verse 18, vengeance belongs to me, the Lord says. I will repay. Now, you have confidence in this. And this is what can allow you to walk away. Will there ever be an injustice, a wrong suffered, that God will just let go? Will he repay every one of them?
Yes.
So if you know that for certain, and you can rest on that, I'm going to get my justice someday. Now, there's going to be a couple exceptions to that, and I won't address them. But would that make you feel better, knowing in the largest court that you can appeal to, it's going to be taken care of? And it might be a long time down the road, but it's okay. You can walk away. Yes.
I think the thing we have problems with is it's in his time on the repayment.
Exactly.
And it's not on ours. We want justice, and we want it now.
Right now.
And so that's the difference. And God knows when it's best, when it's best served, and we just need to be patient and wait.
Exactly.
For his part.
Okay, now let me say this. Are there things you've done that you didn't have to suffer consequences for because God forgave you and relieved you of it?
Yes.
So is there a possibility those that offended you, they will be forgiven and relieved that if, especially if they come to Christ?
Yes.
Now, are you going to whine about that or rejoice in it?
Rejoice.
Not any whining at all. It's not fair. You did this and you're forgiven. I don't like it. There's no justice. Wait a second. What happened to you? You didn't have to pay. You didn't have to suffer. You didn't deserve it. And yet you were forgiven. So if it's good enough for me, shouldn't it be good enough for my brother or sister?
That person might be coming to Christ themselves.
Well, they'd have to come to Christ to get that forgiveness, right?
Exactly.
So I don't know what it is about us that sometimes we're so full of ourselves that we can't rejoice when someone else is forgiven because we still want justice. But if we live that way, then we'd be condemned ourselves. What did Jesus say? Do not judge one another. And that's what he's talking about is condemning, because the standard in which you judge others, that's how you're going to be judged. So he says, be full of mercy. Because if you want mercy, what do you have to give? Mercy. All right. Right.
Let God.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the whole idea is, again, treating others is the way you want them to treat. I'm just going to go from there to the next verse. Verse 20. Here's the opposite then. So if your enemy is hungry, what do you do? Remember, it says, as much as it depends upon you, here's the things you can do to win your brother over. This is how you're going to get payback, by making him your friend. If he's thirsty, give him a drink. In doing so, you'll heap burning coals on his head. That's kind of interesting thought, to heap burning coals on his head. Remember when Joseph, he entertained his brothers when they sold him into slavery? Then you fast forward and he's now in charge of all the family relief. His brothers come to him. Did he play with them a little? And when they gave all their money to buy their grain and they go back and they open their sacks, what's in there? And they go, what is going on? We're in trouble. Did it heap burning coals on their head?
Yep.
But what was he being gracious?
Yep.
Yeah, it was his brothers. Rather than seeking vengeance, he was giving it back. Now, did he have the power to exact vengeance from them? But no, he blessed them. Come on over. We're going to let you live in the land of Goshen here. Yes.
My husband said you have to not enjoy it too much.
Not too.
Because you can. You can, you know, that other person is feeling bad and you're enjoying it too much.
All right. Don't enjoy them. When you do nice things to them, you mean back? Yeah. Don't enjoy it too much. That's good because you're. Wayne. Yes.
And things of convenience. But back then, a fire was really important. And if your fire went out, you didn't cook. You didn't, there's a lot of things you didn't use to stay warm. And so if you needed to, you could go to your neighbor and in some kind of a good vessel, get some coals from them and usually carry it on your head as you go back to your home. So if you want to heap coals on their head,
yeah.
You're really going to give them something positive.
That's good. That's good. And that's true what he's saying there. All right. So, and I like the last verse, and it goes back to the big picture. Either you're going to be overcome by evil and become just like the world, or you're going to overcome evil with good. It's his choice. That's the battle we're in. It's interesting, the word overcome is the word we get Nike. It comes from the word Nike, which the famous shoe company, which means conqueror, victor. That's what it means. Nike, conqueror, champion. It's a good name for a shoe, for a sports company, but it's better for a Christian. We're overcomers. We're not going to allow evil to rule in our lives. Is that a constant battle?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So there is social relationships, and I want to turn to government because we have a lot to talk about here in this time. This is going to be the one of the most challenging sections. First, from Rome's perspective, or the Christian's perspective in that day, Paul's writing to the church which is at Rome, which is the center of the Roman government, where you had Caesar sitting on a throne, worshiping or having other people worship them as God. And the oppression that took place among the Roman government, well, it was just terrible. At one time, when Rome burnt, Nero blamed it on the Christians, and that started this terrible persecution against Christians. And we could go into the atrocities that took place, you know, from burning on stake. But it affected them financially. They starved, all sorts of problems, put in prison unjustly. And not to speak about the Roman occupation of Jerusalem at their time and how they had to pay taxes to this evil malignant sore on society called the Romans, and you had to pay taxes to them and support that cause. So there was constant rebellion among the Jews, and that's what caused the ultimate conflict that Rome come down and wiped them out in 70 AD, because they're constantly rebelling against this governing power. So now I'm a Christian, and so the question is, should I support this evil cause in any way, by submitting to them or much less paying taxes? That's a big question, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Now, it's argued today the same thing. As a Christian, should you support evil governments in any way? Because some people will take this text and say, well, this is only going to be talking about good governments, but evil governments, you don't support them. Well, I'm not going to see the distinction in it at all. Because in their day, Roman was one of the evil ones. The Jehovah's Witness, they'll take this passage because they say, to you, for you to salute the flag or say the Pledge of Allegiance is like saying, Hi Hitler. And so they would say that government as a large is anti-God in his government, in his kingdom. So that's why it's wrong for a Jehovah's Witness to salute, to say the Pledge of Allegiance, give any kind of honor to the government. So they take this passage and they apply it to the government of God. Well, that's kind of contradictory, and we'll show that. But people wrestle with this a lot. But I think if we read through it, it's just going to be simply says what it says. And there's a lot of questions. I cannot answer them. So I'll ask the questions before you do so I can answer them, say, I don't know. Okay? There's where we're going to go. So we're looking at a transformed life, right? And here he says, every person, I'm in chapter 13 and verse 1, I'll read off the chart there, is to be in subjection to the governing authorities. For there is no authority except from God, and those which exist are established by God. Now notice the all-inclusive words. Every person, right? There's no authority, and there, except for those that exist, that were not established by God. Now, so I'll ask the question, you answer it. Does God establish, from this verse, every governing authority over man?
Yes.
How does God do that? I don't know. But did he in the past raise up even evil governments to do his bidding? The Babylonians were called that. He said that in Isaiah 10, I'm going to raise them up, and the Assyrians. And yet he punishes them later. And so you go, why did God raise up that nation? The answer is, I don't know. Why did he put those people in charge over those people? I don't know. But I do know this. Does God raise up governments over people?
Yes.
Now, so this word here, established, I got to get you to see that. First, there's three things from here. We're to submit. They exist above you. That's what this word governing authority means. They're hyper or above is what the word literally means. And second of all, they're arranged by God. That's the word established. It's a military term when you're raising. So here's a picture. If we had a group of people here, and so I don't have time to draw all the people in this nation. Then we have a group of people over here and a group of people over here. Do all those peoples, whether they're in countries by themselves or on a continent or just different nations within a continent, doesn't matter, do they all have some type of kings or rulers over them?
Yes.
Whether it's democratic, dictator, you know, a monarchy, everyone has some type of authority over it that controls those people to some extent, correct?
Yeah.
Some type of leader. Now, here this verse is saying God is the one that has arranged all that. Isn't that right, saying? The word established means to arrange, to set in place. They're set in place to rule over you. And then your job, subjection, means to arrange yourself under. That's exactly what the word means. God arranges them over, you're to submit yourself under. Okay? Because they exist above you. God, government, you. Now, are we talking about spiritual matters?
No.
But when it comes to civil government, where every nation has to have one or does have one, God put the people in place. Your job is to submit. Anarchy is what?
Against government.
That's right. It's rebellion against the government that exists and all the laws that they promote. Because for whatever reason you come up with, there's no room for a Christian to be an anarchist in any way. No way. Okay. So there's the principles from verse 1. You with me? Now, I'm not asking you to like them, but you have to understand God's wisdom is behind this. So if we respect God, we understand this is healthy and good for us. The problem is I just don't understand it all the time, but I have to trust God. So verse 2. He says, therefore, whoever resists the authority has opposed the commandment or the ordinance of God. Because God put this in place by his word. He's the one that directed it to happen. And the word arrange is the Greek word tasso. And all I want to show you that is, because that's what he says, he established, he arranged. The word oppose, see the word resist, what does your Bible say? Resist. It has the word anti in front of the tasso in the Greek. Anti always means what?
Against.
I'm against the arrangement of God. That's what it says. So when you resist the government, you're actually fighting against who?
God.
God himself. Because he's the one that arranged it for you not to align yourself under it, but to fight against his arrangement. You're finding yourself fighting against God. Whoa, that changes things. I don't want to do that. Well, that's what you do when you resist government. Okay? So, and they're going to receive condemnation upon themselves. From who? Well, if you're fighting against God, it's going to come from God, but it often comes through the servant of God, which is the government. Okay? So, if you work against, you're standing against God, and there's going to be judgment. Now, this had to be especially hard when you had the king of Rome who exalted himself as God. Then the Caesars all did that. And they demanded worship. Now, could you worship them and stay faithful to God? No. So, could you even pay taxes to them?
Yes.
See, it just feels bad. It feels dirty to pay taxes to someone who's exalted himself as God. What we're going to understand is you're accountable for submitting to their law. God will hold them accountable for what they do. You're accountable to be paying taxes because it's not yours, it belongs to them. God will be hold them accountable how they spend that tax money. Because a lot of people say, how can you support that organization or that government when they use that tax money for abortions or genocide or whatever? You're not responsible for what they do with their power or their money. God will hold them accountable, right? You're just responsible to submit. So you're saying I'm off the hook? Yeah, that's what Paul's saying. You're off the hook from what for being responsible for what they do. You're responsible for what? Paying, support, obeying, submitting. All right? So that's going to be verse 3 would takes us to it. For rulers, and this is a general statement, so there are always going to be exceptions, are not a cause of fear for good behavior. Now, generally, if you submit to the government, whether it's a good one or a bad one, will they let you be? Generally.
Yes.
Was that true in Russia right now, in China? If you follow the rules, will they generally let you be?
Yes.
It's only those that insist on and persist in rebelling. They're the ones, we got to do something about this guy and make an example of him. Generally, is that true?
Yes.
And so, if you don't want to have fear of authority, here's what you do. No fear, do what is good, is what he says. And you'll have praise for them saying, because it, what is it? Who is the it? The authority, the government, here it is a minister of God. The word minister means servant. Your Bible might say servant. It's interesting. The word servant means someone that raises dust. The root word came from it. Raises dust. When their day, did they have carpet and nice paved streets? But when you told your servant to do something, he went about it quickly and just caused dust to be raised. And that's the idea where the word came from. When you serve, you're raising dust. It became just a word to speak of someone that is serving you. They're hurriedly doing whatever you want. And this is just an amazing thing. Governments are serving God. They think often they're serving themselves. If it's a king or a dictator, if it's a democracy or a republic, they think they're serving the people. Well, they say that. But actually, they're all serving God. So when Nebuchadnezzar was raised up, or the Assyrian king was raised up and brought an attack on Israel, they thought they were serving themselves. They had no idea they're actually serving Jehovah. And you say, well, how does God use them? I don't know. And why does he let them do what they do? I don't know. But who's in charge? The Lord of hosts of all nations and all kings. We learn from the Old Testament, it's God. And Jesus, he's the King of kings and Lord of lords. All authority in the heavens and on the earth has been given to him. Does that mean Jesus is in charge of all these authorities? All right. And will he judge them in appropriate time? Yes. So if you don't want to have any fear, You could be a Christian and survive and thrive in Russia, China, and other places like that. Because where was Christianity, what government was it ruling on when it exploded over the whole world? Romans. Is the United States anything close to the Roman government as far as the evilness that it had? I mean, even the Caesar said the best kind of love you can have is with a small child. You know, homosexuality prevailed, and it was just terrible what was going on. And yet, in that climate, Christianity just flourished. It was persecuted, but it flourished. So can you do well in any government if you submit? The general rule is yes. If you want to have fear for that government, here's what you do. Do what's wrong. Don't obey its laws. Be afraid, because it does not bear the sword for nothing. Now, here's a sword. It's a Roman sword. So what is he speaking of when he says the Roman government does not yield or use the sword in vain? What's he talking about? Punishment. Because police today might have pistols or something like that. That is their symbol of authority, that you better submit. And if you don't, you better be afraid. And their symbol of authority was the sword. And so he says, Rome does not bear the sword in vain. In other words, if you do wrong, what can you expect? To be punished. And what ultimately was the sword used for? Capital punishment. You could lose your life for various crimes against the state. That's capital punishment. And so here God is using this nation state to punish its rebellious people, some by terminating their life. Now, did God do that with the nation state of Israel? Because it was both a civil political nation plus a religious nation. It's very unique. It's the only one we've ever seen that are both God's people spiritually, but they're also a nation with a king. And they had government. Did God endorse and promote and actually demand capital punishment in the nation of Israel? Yeah, he had to have certain parameters. He had to have two witnesses to the crime. It's only certain crimes that elevated itself to be worthy of capital punishment. But it was life for a life, tooth for a tooth. Now, people say, well, that's against who God is because that's murder. Now, the Ten Commandments says, thou shalt not murder. There's a difference between murder and killing. And you say, well, please explain because I'm confused. They're both taking someone's life. Murder, how would you define it?
Your
vengeance, right? It's taking a life without cause. All right? You have something I want, so I shoot you so I can rob you. Did that person deserve to lose their life? No. Killing can be justified by God if it's taking a life for cause. Okay, you with me? You say, well, what elevates itself to be worthy of the cause that would justify taking a life? Well, if they murdered someone else, right? Huh?
It's the inability to follow rules. It's their whatever rules. It's the person's fault.
That's right. It falls upon the person, is what she's saying.
Yeah. To follow the rules of the government or whatever it is.
Because each government will set different standards of when you will lose your life. God's standards in the Old Testament were just. You know, it was certain ones, like adultery, caught in adultery, certain acts of homosexuality, murder, of course. There's various ones. But every government will be different. Now, in the United States, everyone practiced capital punishment, but we've gone way away from that in most states. But that's okay. That's their job. It's not my job to demand what they're going to do. Okay? My job is to just do what? Submit. Do you want to not spend life in prison? Is that something you want? Well, then don't do anything wrong. It's that simple, right? Do you want to stay out of jail? Well, obey the law. It's just that easy. People talk about privacy and all that, and I understand it. Don't get me started. But when it really comes down to it, God knows everything anyway. So if you're doing what is good, do you really care what the government knows about your life? No. If you're hiding something and you're trying to keep things secret because you're doing things wrong, maybe you have reason to fear. Now, I know there's other issues. I'm just talking in generalities. Yes.
Is Paul addressing this conversation to the zealots?
To the zealots who were Jews, Jewish Christians?
Well, who wanted to replace the Romans with their own nation.
Yeah. I'm sure, even though he doesn't state that, that there is a Jewish element in the church, obviously. And there's a Jewish population in Rome, the church at Rome. They're always got this angst towards the Roman government. They're always anti. So Paul, even though he doesn't call them out, you sure this has to be there. Do you know what I'm saying? And this has to smart for him. But when you live a transformed life, this is the new attitude you take on, because we serve a king, Jesus Christ. We're citizens of a heavenly kingdom. And so when you go to another nation to visit, who's been to Canada in the last year? Anyone? Canada. Do you like all the laws of Canada?
I don't think I know most.
You don't even know them. Do you care to transform and reform them? Why?
Because I'm only going to be there for the weekend.
Only going to be there for a weekend. You don't care what they do. I mean, generally you don't, but there might be some things, but you're coming home. We're just here on this world for a weekend. And then we're going home to our eternal home in heaven. And so why do we get all caught up in what's going on politically and in our country? Well, it's our country. No, it's not. You're a foreigner here. You're just here for a little while. Your citizenship is in heaven. Give it a rest. God's in charge. And I don't know why we get so worked up sometimes. It's probably because we don't have this transformed mind. Yes, Heather. That's a great question. Because certain countries allow you certain rights to redress or to object or protest, you can, within those parameters, under the law and submit, do some type of protest. All right? Other country states, you can't. So you probably shouldn't. So the question I'm going to ask is, what's the most effective way to make change? Is it protesting the street, or is talking to someone about the Lord and getting their hearts changed to the Lord? Sometimes I understand mass numbers make changes, and I understand that, but you just got to understand where your energy is best served. Again, if I was in, I'm going to go to Africa again, and they do some terrible things, the government's there, but I'm not going to join a protest and march the street. Why? Because I don't live there. And it's not my state or country, right? The United States is, so we should. You make up your own mind what you're going to do. But just keep this in mind, this bigger picture. Yes?
Pray and pay taxes.
Pray, yeah. Pray and pay taxes. Yeah, okay. Well, he goes to that. Therefore, it's necessary. That word necessary means your arm is bent behind you. What's that kind of picture? You're being... force. Here's an internal force, because you have new thinking, a transformed mind. I got to do this because I want to give glory to God. That it's necessary to be in subjection. That means arrange yourself under. Not just because of wrath, you want to stay out of trouble. That's one motive. The other one is what? Conscience sake. That's for who? God. I want to be a shining light. I'm an upstanding citizen, and I'm not here to change the government. I'm here to change the hearts of men. For because of this, here's what you do. Pay your taxes. God will hold them accountable for how they use them. You're just accountable to pay them. Because rulers, are servants of God. So this couldn't be God's kingdom like the Jehovah's Witness say. Because here it says rulers are servants of God, devoting themselves to this very thing. And then we see in verse 7, render to all who is that is due them. I don't care if it's tax, some type of custom or tribute, fear, in other words, if that causes you to obey the law and obey the traffic signs, honor to whom honor. You know what it says? Honor the king. Pray for him. Now, when you look at it, that's really simple. It's not hard to obey. Paying your taxes, honor them. It's just hard to want to sometimes. Because we're just sometimes get angry and all worked up. Stop it. They're in charge because God put them. He'll deal with them. Right? Whew, thank you. It's not my job anymore. And you just feel light, a lightness take over you. All that angst and anxiety goes away. All right? So, any questions? I'm looking at the clock because we don't have lots of time. So we have room for a couple questions.
I didn't know you could see that clock.
Well, you're so funny. All right. We'll introduce this. Verse 8. I'll introduce it by explaining first what it doesn't say. He's going on now to just general relationships. And well, here, he says, owe no nothing to anyone. Notice the absoluteness again. Just like everyone, submit to the king. Owe nothing to anyone except to love one another. For he who loves his neighbors fulfilled the law. And we'll talk about that next week. But let's talk about the idea of owing nothing to no one. Some people have taken this to an extreme and saying, well, therefore, you can't have a credit card debt. You can't have a mortgage. You can't borrow money from your neighbor. Okay? Let me just ask this. Were people allowed to borrow money in the Old Testament under the Jewish system?
Yes.
What were they not allowed to do? Charge interest when the person was borrowing to stay alive. Business was another thing. You have to understand that. But if your brother's in need, they need food, you can't lend them something and charge them interest. That's just wrong, right? But could you borrow things in the Old Testament system? Yes. Well, were you owing something? Okay, let me just look at the idea of a mortgage. So today's society, it's impossible for most people, I know there are exceptions, to save up enough money to pay for a house outright, right? $200,000, especially when you're starting. So you come up with a down payment, and you go to the bank, and they say, we'll loan you the balance, but you have to sign this agreement that we hold trust to the property until you pay it off. And here's your monthly payment schedule. So every week or every month, you pay $800. So I pay the first month $800. Do I owe that mortgage company any money for the rest of the month? You sure? I paid them for that month. Do I owe them anything? So yeah, you owe them still $159,000, right? Because you paid $40,000 down, and no, I don't owe them anything. They say payment in full. You look at your payment due, it'll say what? Zero. Now next month, what do I owe them on the first? The next payment, I pay it, and what? Do I owe them anything for the rest of the month? So I just want you to understand, are you hedging on obligation or a debt when you pay your mortgage every month? Are you trying to be dishonorable by borrowing something and then walking away from that responsibility? No. In fact, if you do, you'll lose it, right? So that's what he's talking about. You don't borrow something from people and don't pay them back. You don't find yourself in debt to people. Because that's so dishonorable, isn't it? Because in their days, it wasn't payment plans like we see in a mortgage. It was a handshake. Here's $500. Pay me when you can. So 3 years later, you haven't paid it. Is that honorable for a Christian? It's so dishonorable. So owe no one anything except what? Love. We'll talk about that, Lord willing, next week. Thank you.